Good morning and welcome to WNHHFM's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. We have two gentlemen this morning who make New Haven tick in normal days and even more in these days of COVID-19 lockdowns and quarantines. Say good morning to Reverend Stephen Cousin of Bethel AME Church and Rabbi Michael Farman of Temple Emmanuel. Thank you for making time this morning, gentlemen.
No, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. What a great way to connect at this time of social distancing.
And speaking of connecting, you folks have an extra challenge. You connect every week to hundreds of people who depend on you for spiritual guidance, perspective, and convening community with your services. You obviously have not been able to hold services in public. So I wonder if I could start with Reverend Cousin to ask you, did you have services this weekend? And if so, how and what did you preach?
Well, we definitely had service, you know, this weekend, but the method how we had service was different, where now we're utilizing, you know, free conference calls, where now people, we had a prayer line established about 5 years ago. So we're now utilizing that line a little bit more. And for the first time since I've been at Bethel, we've actually did Facebook Live, where I was fortunate to go to my sanctuary, granted no more than four people there, but we still felt like we had an actual service. And I preached a sermon, Deliverance in Despair, where I came from Isaiah 43, verses 16 through 21, where really the emphasis of that scripture was when the Lord said, "Behold, I am doing a new thing. Forget the former things, do not dwell on the past," and really just talking about how we will get through this pandemic, but it may not be what we perceive it to be, or it may not be delivered how we want to be. But the newness of this situation, where I am inspired in the midst of, you know, the death and the tragedy that we are facing, I'm starting to try and look for the positive throughout what's happening across the world, where in the city of New Haven, where we always had a technology gap with amongst our students. And for the first time, we provided Chromebooks. That way students can continue online learning. And I'm looking at prison reform, where you have states like New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, that are considering or have done releasing low-level offenders. And so I'm looking at all of this, where things we are talking about addressing, we're doing it right now in the middle of this time.
It's forcing us to see what's important to us, and maybe, and people talk about this in other realms. Jonathan Wharton was on the show about universities being forced to connect better to people who can't always come onto campus. So you're finding that this amid despair, there's hope.
Well, you know, what I love about this particular time is that in the seasons of plenty, my members who were unable to physically go to church, they always talk to me about how they miss going to service and how they feel they wish they could be connected. And this is the first time where now they feel like there is a path, an avenue for them to be connected to the church, where now they're hearing familiar voices over the phone or they're seeing familiar faces on the screen. So it's something that we always talked about. I have a member who's living in China right now. Biology, yes. Teaching eighth grade biology. And she's always been talking about being able to live stream our services. And for the first time, we were able to give that to her yesterday.
So she was not one of the people, she was online. Yes, now, sir. One thing I loved about, I think when I was at your service last, I loved your sermon most of all, But I also really loved the Monks, the music, Monk family. And was there any music element to your service yesterday?
We're keeping it very, very tight, where we may just have one musician and one soloist, where we're really trying to adhere to the state guidelines of no more than five people. And so, but the goal is, for me, I don't want to force anybody to feel like they have to leave their house to hold worship service. So I'm only talking to people who feel comfortable in actually doing this type of ministry, where I don't want to put any pressure. So we actually have three musicians available to us. And one was, you know, as soon as we asked him, he was more than willing to come. His name was Alton Johnson, and he did a phenomenal job leading the service yesterday.
Okay, so sound like it was a good day. And you're listening to Dateline New Haven, WNHHFM 103.5, live streamed at newhavenimprint.org. We're talking about the role of the clergy and their congregations in these times of crisis. We were fortunate to have the Reverend Stephen Cousin from Bethel AME Church and Rabbi Michael Farman of Temple Emmanuel. Rabbi Farman, music is also a great element of services at your synagogue. You play the guitar very well. And it's always been a big part of the service. What did you do this Shabbat? What was it like at Temple Emmanuel? What kind of service did you have?
Well, just like Pastor Cousin and his congregation, this conversation about how do we reach out to people who don't drive at night or who can't make it? Should we be streaming services? That conversation has come up in the past, and as often these conversations, that involves technology and thinking and who is going to administer it and where is the resources for it coming from. And so a number of times this conversation came up over the last few years. It came up and it went away. Well, the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I feel like I'm losing count here. We have moved very rapidly and went from the service 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago, something like this, whereby I was still in the sanctuary and we had a much smaller number of congregants, and we asked people to spread around the sanctuary so that they were not in contact with anyone. And we had somebody asking questions at the door, making sure people didn't have fever and didn't travel and those kind of precautions. And we live streamed for the first time in parallel. And there were a lot of people who logged in because they really, at this time, they really wanted to connect. The last 2 weeks, I have switched completely now that we had to close our sanctuary. I have switched completely to leading services on Zoom. So first time, I think when it was over, I needed to sit down and have a stiff drink because it was a very different kind of experience, I have to tell you. Everything is live.
It sounds like it was an adjustment for you.
It's a huge adjustment, but I have to tell you what makes, you know, and we can talk about all the technical stuff and adjustments and things that you are not used to doing that you have to watch in addition to things that you normally do. But what absolutely made it spectacularly worth it was the fact that we had very large numbers of congregants tune in and people seeing each other's faces on the screen, and being able to connect, the amount of joy that it has emanated, the amount of ability to connect at this time of uncertainty, I feel that everything else can be forgiven because people really needed to be together. In addition, I have also discovered last week that apparently there are settings in Zoom that can allow you to fiddle a little bit with audio settings so that if you're playing a musical instrument as well as voice, it comes through a little better than the...
Were you in synagogue or were you home?
You know, I'm at home. I did figure out I think I can probably show this to you. Maybe not right now. I have figured out the virtual background, the picture of our ark. So it looks a little funky because I seem to be zooming in and out of this picture, but it does create a little bit of familiarity and comfort for people. But I think that being at home has enabled me to both do it myself and to rely on my family a little bit. And, you know, this is Shabbat. And so having a chance to have the candles right there on the table and be able to celebrate with my family has made it a little easier. So, and you know, this conversation, by the way, of how do we go into sanctuaries and what is and what isn't appropriate for us to do, it's a conversation that's been raging among my colleagues for the last week or two, because the question is, should we strive to bring sense of normalcy and holiness as we lead our services from our sanctuaries, for those of us obviously who are able to transition so quickly onto streaming, or perhaps who've been streaming all along, or is it more important that we model the behavior for our congregants so that we know that we sit at home, that we all stay at home, that it is incredibly important for us to recognize this new reality in which we should all keep each other safe, our first responders safe, make sure that we don't spread this. So, you know, it's many people have gone on their own, like Pastor Cousin. That's a beautiful thing, keeping a distance from people. And others have done this from home. So I think we're all experimenting a little bit.
Yeah, you are all experienced. So what was your sermon? Did you play the guitar and did you have a sermon?
I did play the guitar. In fact, one of the things that I figured out, it's still, you know, technology is both wonderful and a little limiting. So in addition to being on Zoom with everybody who logged in, we also live streamed to YouTube channel. And so that, I think, captures it and puts it there. I've chosen, rather than remaining in full frame, I have chosen to project the slides with words and with the text of prayers onto the screen. So you can actually go and check it out, see what that felt like. I think that as an online experience, I wouldn't necessarily tout it as a well-crafted one. Many of my colleagues who have been doing this for a long time have teams and professionals and cantors and rabbis, and they really are doing a spectacular job of figuring out how do you actually reach out an audience online, right?
It's what's in your heart, I think. I think what I've always learned from tech over the last 15 years of doing the independent is that, sure, it's great to have chops, it's great to be slick, but what really comes across on the internet is genuinity. So how did it happen in 2016 that Bernie Sanders ran for president and wrote 3,000-word Facebook posts that had jargon from the 1930s Leninist-Stalinist debates, and all these people read it, which would flew in the face of everything consultants would tell you what to do online. And there's this feeling of genuinity. And I'll bet what you two are doing is true. Some congregations of all faiths have more experience over the years in going online. But I think it's what's in your heart. Reverend Cousin, when you were listening to Rabbi Farben talk about the hesitance to go online with services, but then doing it, but have been talked about before. You were talking about that as well. I was wondering if each of you now, starting with Reverend Cousins, thinks this will be permanent, that when, if life returns to a situation where we show up, people can show up again, will you live stream your services, or will you worry that people then won't come?
I tell my members now, my biggest hope is that the things that we're doing now, we can implement moving forward when we do able to return back to our sanctuaries. Where I do believe there will be some elements that will be infused with our worship services, but trying to figure out what it looks like. And so right now it's new, right? Where we're actually being able to live stream and, you know, actually understanding the nuances of what to expect and how to go about navigating these times. But it's going to be different now because you're forced to do it. Now, when everybody comes back inside the sanctuaries, will that demand still be there? I would like to think so, because I've been pushing for live streaming. I've been pushing for audio visual equipment, you know, since I came to Bethel. And so I'm hoping that this conversation can be implemented and actually executed maybe 5-6 months down the road.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm not mistaken, both of you do see this as probably going to continue long term, that there'll be live stream. And by the way, Reverend Cousin, where did you live stream? You said Facebook Live?
I did Facebook Live, and we're looking at starting, just like as Rabbi Farben said, a YouTube channel. So we're looking at all means of communication that we did not knew existed or we never wanted to implement.
And Reverend Rabbi Farben, you too, you think this will be a permanent thing where you'll be live streamed?
So, you know what? I think one of the things that we all probably have to acknowledge is that there's no way that we can go back and stop that conversation in the way that it has burst into our scene due to the virus and unprecedented conditions that we're all operating under. At the same time, I don't know. I think that the conversation will continue because there will be, I have very little doubt that there will be some form of live streaming, probably on the level of, you know, if there are older members or if there's somebody who is at a distance or if somebody is in the hospital and they want to tune in, that we will still we'll have to figure out a way to allow members to be part of this. At the same time, it's the in-person experience of a community that we're really continuing to strive for. So the answer is, it will probably be a combination of both.
Yeah, and let's talk about that in-person irreplaceable experience that can't be replicated online as we talk on Dateline New Haven about faith, community, and the clergy in the times of COVID-19. We're visiting at 103.5 FM live stream to newhavenindependent.org with Reverend Stephen Cousin and Rabbi Michael Farben. So what do you do about the situations that traditionally do call for in-person connections? So Reverend Cousin, have you had a plan or perform any funerals, or have you put them on hold? I know there's one tomorrow in Dwight where they're going to have drive-by viewing in cars of the casket outside Harrow Gay Hill. We had a funeral for my brother, 10 people at a graveside. It was very touch and go, 6 feet apart, outdoor. Can you tell me, Reverend Cousin, with funerals or any other required in-person ritual, how you've swung with that so far?
Well, I haven't personally had any experience in dealing with a funeral during this time. But I've actually, you know, my family are pastors, and they're dealing with it. And, you know, right now, for some of the families, they really want to have their services inside the sanctuary. Mm. And a hard time processing that, you know, given the amount of people you're able to have, you know, for the service, where I believe right now you can only go to the graveside. And I heard, but the numbers are conflicting, right? Where I've heard it's no more than 10, then I heard it's no more than 50. To actually be at a gravesite and to actually, you know, maintain the social distancing requirements. But that is really going to be a challenge, and I think it's going to be up to the discretion of the local pastors as to how to go about navigating it. But really, you're trying to keep everybody safe, but it's difficult when the family's grieving. All rationale may go out the window because they want to make sure that their loved one received the proper burial. And it's hard to really make that determination.
And there were two in this week in New Haven. One, they're doing the drive-by viewing. The other, they said, we're going to gather when it's safe. Separate from funerals, Reverend Cousin, have you been called upon to administer any kind of pastoral care in a way that proved challenging because we're not supposed to be in person? Do people still come in your office? Have you counseled someone going through tribulation?
Everything is pretty much over the phone through communication. We have our office open for limited hours, but it's really by appointment only. And really, if we can't have a conversation over the phone, that's really where the interaction stops. Me personally, as Rabbi Farben, you know, stated, I have a young family. You know, I have two sons, 6 and 2, and I have a wife, been married for 9 years, September. And I have to think about their safety, that if I do come out and come back home and bring, I may be infected and now have potentially affecting them. It's you know, it's a risky situation that I'm not personally willing to take. So in terms of my counseling, it's really over the phone or I use Zoom. Just so you know, as the biggest thing is about feeling connected. And, you know, during this time, there are ways to be connected without really having to be in person. That's just my personal belief.
Well, I think part of the most important thing here is that we carry responsibility And especially with this virus, I think it's brought home to all of us that it is not even about us and our take on the safety, our personal safety, or even safeties of our families. I'm really inspired by Reverend Cousin by acknowledging the fact that we have responsibility to our families, but even more so, we have responsibilities to people we're talking to. What if I have walked through a store or I interacted with someone and in fact, I am a carrier? We all have to, at this point, assume that we are potentially carriers of the virus while either not displaying the signs yet or perhaps having it mildly, which, you know, may or may not happen. But it means that the next person we're talking to and people reaching out to us who may be vulnerable, I would be, if I'm knowingly doing something that can contribute to somebody else getting the disease, that is a terrifying thought. And so I think it's our responsibility to everyone, not just to ourselves, to stay at home and to model this. And of course, between the phone and now with video calls, I use both Zoom and Google video conference, video software, so that you can check in and speak to people directly. It's not the same as sitting. I have to say that since this started, I was still able to visit people in the hospital when it first started, but we were asked to keep social distancing, so no shaking hands, no holding hands. I visited people in the hospital and I couldn't come in and give them a hug or hold their hand while we prayed. That was pretty rough on me. I found that very challenging. How do you adapt, but the recognition of the fact that it's not just about you, it's about safety of people that you care for, that you serve, that is a most important driving force here.
And now, you know, we haven't hit the peak yet. 2 weeks is when people are really, my guess is that sadly we're going to know people who are dying, and you folks are really going to have to face those challenges. I apologize, Reverend Cousin, you were about to say something.
Well, and, you know, to that point, you know, the biggest challenges that we're looking at now facing is by this coming Sunday for our tradition is First Sunday, where we normally would serve, you know, Holy Communion. And we're having discussions amongst all ranks as to how do we go about administering the sacraments. Do we do it at all, or is it going to be drive-by or drop it off at people's front doorstep? We don't know how this is going to look, given, you know, where we're saying that April is supposed to be, you know, at its peak for the virus, where I believe the president came on this morning talking about it may be more than 100,000 people that may die from this virus. And I think Dr. Fauci said on Sunday in Meet the Press, it could be more than millions of people infected. And we know that in New Rochelle, New York, where it was at first the epicenter or the hotspot for the virus, it was really spread through communion. And we don't know how we should take that, you know, moving forward for our people.
So I apologize for my ignorance. When you talk about sacraments, does that mean the wafer? I mean, what exactly do you do?
It means the Eucharist, taking, you know, the symbolically for our tradition, the body of Jesus and the drinking the blood of Jesus. So it's the
and
wafer.
What are the symbols?
Bread being the wafer and, you know, grape juice for the blood.
So you're not gonna be able to do this, are you? Or do you think it's gonna happen?
There are ways where they're already prepackaged, where you don't have to pour the elements or pour the juice in cups or pass out the bread, you know, using your hands. It already comes prepackaged, completely wrapped up. And so I know some churches may be using that. We don't know what to do. We're still talking about it even right now as to what is a good plan moving forward, where some people are saying don't do it at all, and then there are some that are saying I still want my communion this coming Sunday.
So you might be doing drive-by or no?
I don't feel comfortable, me personally, doing the drive-by. I don't want to do that, but I'm still trying to maintain the sanctity of Holy Communion and really the sacredness behind it. But how do we do that during this time? Because our Holy Week is next week, and you know, and Easter Sunday for us is 2 weeks away. So how do we, you know, this is the conversation we're having right now amongst ourselves about how do we go about moving forward.
Is it, am I wrong to think it's probably going to all be online?
No, you're not wrong to think that at all. I really believe that most services by that time will be streamed online, or most will try to do from home. But there will be some type of service happening during that time.
But Rabbi Farben.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. Keep going.
So the one thing that concerns me is, you know, with the governor saying that, you know, even though we limit to 5 people as of Thursday, where except worship services where you can have up to 50 people. And that concerns me because there may be some people who want to be in church on Easter Sunday and, you know, take their chances. And as a pastor, how do you navigate that?
So I don't know if this is helpful.
Follow up on that question, Rabbi Farben, last week, because I wonder whether the governor has made it harder for the majority of pastors who are trying to save lives and not have gatherings by fearing the backlash and allowing technically there to be 50 people at some churches. I think it makes it harder for the majority of ministers who have already moved past that. I don't know.
So I think that there's a couple of things that first of all, my heart goes out to you and your community. What a tough thing it is to endure. Both in the lead up during Lent and the lead up to Easter, what a dramatic set of decisions that you have to make. I can't even, you know, we're struggling with how we're going to deal with Passover. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, wow, if this was happening in the middle of High Holidays, what would that look like? You know, what an impact this would have on our communities. But there's two things. One is our sanctuary is in the town of Orange, and the town of Orange 2 weeks ago sent a letter to all of us saying that all public gatherings in all houses of worship have been suspended. There is potentially a dispensation for a funeral, but that was 2 weeks ago. I don't even think that would apply. So I think that's a responsible thing to do, and it actually made my job and the job of my colleagues in Orange a little easier, because we're not trying to figure out each of these things on our own. The second thing, and that's as pertaining to what we are giving and you know, what pressures come from where. When I first moved to Connecticut, there was a snowstorm, and I was having a conversation with the president of the synagogue at the time, and I said, well, you know what, I can drive. I'm okay. I can drive in all conditions. So I'll be there, and I'll lead the service, and whoever shows up will show up, you know, even if it's a snowstorm. And what the lesson that I've learned was, it's not about you. Meaning it's not about my ability to drive. It's about how, by keeping the doors open, I am inviting some people who actually are not that good at driving and under those conditions, but who will be compelled to say, oh, you know, the synagogue's open, the rabbi is there, the service is there, I should be there for a minyan as well. And that's how you endanger others. So I think that trying to combine, this is a very, first time I had to cancel Shabbat services, I felt, sending that message, I felt the strangest, Shabbat is canceled. What do you mean? How is that even a thing? But I think that taking on that responsibility and saying that we have to protect not just people who can take care of themselves, but also people, and in this pandemic, all of us are not really, we don't know if we can take care of ourselves. That's the trick.
Rabbi Michael Farben, Reverend Stephen Cousin on Dateline New Haven on WNHHFM 103.5 live stream to newhavenandbend.org. Rabbi Farben, like you, I was fascinated and my heart did go out to Reverend Cousin talking about all the different rituals that are so important this time of year leading up to and including Easter. Of course, we've been in Jewish families having the same conversations about Passover. We have the Seders, which are so important to have families all together. And among the three different streams of Judaism, there are three different views on how much technology could be used during holy days. So the conversation in our household now is, can you have a Zoom Seder? The Seders take place on the first two nights of the holiday outside of Israel. Those are nights when we're not allowed to turn electricity on and off. We're not supposed to use devices. And in fact, one of the blessings of Sabbath and the holy days is that we don't use electronic devices. So I know that for the Orthodox, it's clear cut, you can't. I'm guessing for Reformed congregations like yours, it's totally fine. And we've been wrestling with both Kaddish and Seder's in the conservative movement, because there seems to be a difference of opinion that these are extraordinary times as a textual basis for being able to, maybe we're thinking maybe turn on the device before the first night starts with sundown. How is your congregation navigating those questions?
Well, as you rightly point out, in the Reform world, the question of using technology, especially at a time like this, a Reform movement came out with a responsum about the online minyanim, about the nature of these online gatherings maybe a year or two ago, and actually came down on the side of, no, that's not how you count a minyan. You can't, you know, virtually, that's not it.
Wow.
But this last week, the responsive committee of the Reform Movement, of the CCR, Central Conference of American Rabbis, came out with an emergency response, additional response, and said, we know we said this, we still stand by it, but under current circumstances, the minyan, whether it's for Shiva or a funeral or anything else, has to be online, and it has to be acceptable as a right kind of a practice. So the technology use has been not just approved because the restrictions are different in terms of using electricity and other things, but actually deliberately saying, no, at this time, this is more than appropriate to use this. We hosted last night the Jewish Federation of New Haven under the Taste of Limud. We were supposed to have this day of Jewish learning yesterday, but of course it got postponed. We hosted a conversation with five local rabbis precisely about how do we celebrate Passover in time of pandemic. And what was very interesting, Rabbi Skolnick from Hamden, who's a conservative rabbi, said, I have always been very strict about, technology and Shabbat, but at this time, he said, I say, absolutely, go with technology. He'll be conducting seders on Zoom. So that's a very traditional, but a very different kind of a take on this.
And it does seem the conservatives are in that place about seders. Shiva has been different. My brother did die when this all began. We had the funeral.
I'm so
and at
sorry.
My synagogue, so the conservative movement had a response. It said, We're going to, because this emergency, say it's okay to go online to have 10 people and count as a minyan to say the daily Kaddish prayer. But our rabbi at our synagogue said he doesn't go by that. So our synagogue did not offer online Shiva. So I actually went to a different conservative synagogue online because they did. And I have been going every day to B'nai Jacobs. So it does sound like these are hard legal.
These are very hard decisions, and we all struggle. The Orthodox response, indeed, the traditional response would be no, and we heard from Rabbi Hyman, who very rightly pointed out that Passover sacrifices were offered in the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan, and then the meal happens later. So he said, you want to gather with the family, and you don't want to violate the restriction on technology, have your gathering, have your pre-Seder with family on online. And then turn it off. There has been actually some of the Orthodox communities and Orthodox rabbis in Israel have issued responses last week, which said that as long as you activate Zoom before the onset of the festival, you can have your elderly members of the family there. How do you not bring your parents? I mean, this is what I'm struggling with. How do you not have your parents at your Seder table? That's a tough one. And the answer is, well, if you're ready to embrace technology, then embrace technology. But the other advice has been, these are unprecedented times, and we cannot pretend that we can do everything as normal and as usual by trying to use technology. Meaning, we have to accept and acknowledge that this is pretty unique, and we have to respond to it both as clergy, but also as individual, because the Seder, Reverend Cousin is trying to work with his colleagues. How do you deliver communion, right? But this is a conversation for clergy. How do you actually act on this? Passover Seder, every family sets their own standard, right? And sits down. So how do you do this when families cannot get together? And it's not like me having one account where I can, through Zoom, deliver a Shabbat service. It's actually much more complex. How many people are not feeling comfortable leading that Seder because their elder is the one who usually does that? How do you expand that? We will see a lot of creativity. I'm grateful to see that there's a lot of creativity in the Jewish world that is exploding around this issue, because people are looking and providing responses to this, and the response will range and vary from you know what? Some people will have a very small Seder for the first time, and perhaps we'll spend more time actually engaging in the conversation or going deeper into the text.
Yeah, my others question is whether we're going to make it to Hallel still.
Yeah. Others will find online Sederim that they could watch. Some will be sleeker than others, right? We will all, my advice to everyone is to remember that it's important to do the rituals, but what's also very important is to remember that this is the today of the Seder is the gathering of the family. And if you can figure out a way to be with your loved ones and with your friends and to see them, even if it's not for the entire duration of the Seder, if you can connect with others, if technology is today is allowing us to do that, go for it, do it. That is crucially important that we can connect.
Reverend Cousin, going back, and you know, obviously you said earlier you in the Christian church, you're wrestling with similar issues about Easter and how to still preserve the rituals with technology. What about the nature of the Easter holiday? Rabbi Farman talked about when there actually was the blood sacrifice with the lamb and how that becomes such an interesting way for us to use technology in the hours before sundown. Are there similar aspects of the Easter story that tie into what we're facing with COVID-19, the decisions people have to make religiously?
You know, I haven't even thought about, you know, that right now. It's funny where it's interesting where we should be thinking about it. But I think right now for our situation, we're literally taking it week by week where, you know, I'm pretty sure some of us already had our Easter sermons prepared. Well, we're going to just tell the same old story that we've been used to telling. But now this is forcing us, as Robert Farmer said, to really dig deeper into the meaning of, you know, the belief of the resurrection of our Lord and Savior. And really during this time where we're saying that is unique, that this is happening where it's forcing us to, like, you know, closing everything down during the Lenten season where you're supposed to be giving up things. And now it seems like we're just giving up everything during this time. And so we believe that God is speaking to us. But, you know, we're just trying to understand what the message is. And what's interesting about, you know, the resurrection, nobody believed that Jesus rose that day. It took, you know, 40 days for them to actually see, you know, oh, this really happened, or they see in the ghost, or this is a vision. So we don't know what that story is going to be, you know, now, but I'm pretty sure there is some, you know, imaginative pastor or clergy that will come up with a unique story for this time.
But also what you just said is, how do we understand resurrection, right? And we're wondering what our resurrection is going to be from the depths of this crisis. So I think I was just hearing a sermon right now when you were talking about how it wasn't in one day, it was over 40 days, and it didn't look the way we thought it was going to look.
So I have an idea for the two of you, Reverend Cousins. How about half of your sermon is preached by Paul Bass? I think that might be it.
I think you would see everybody cut off the Zoom.
Well, and you know, when we talk about how long is this going to last, where you keep seeing the deadline being pushed back. First, it was April 7th, now April 30th, and then it's going to be May, June. We don't know how long this is going to last. But I think that's the beautiful thing about having faith, right, where it's not up to us. But it's us having belief that we serve a power that will see us through these difficult times, where in times of crisis, we always look inward into our faith and inward spiritually to help guide us through. And, you know, whatever time, we don't know how we're going to make it, but we make it anyway. There have been period times in our world where it just looked grim, but yet somehow, you know, we made it through. And that's what inspires me. I love the Israelite story, especially dealing with the Exodus movement on through captivity with Babylon. But God always stayed with his people. And that's what I so admire most about this story, about having our faith that we serve a God that will never see us fail. And we really believe in the scripture, no weapon formed against us shall prosper. So, you know, whatever this situation is, we'll get through it together. Still, we know we have, you say, faith over fear, but also being able to practice what the mandates are, but having the faith knowing that we will get through and we will be taken care of when it's all said and done.
Amen.
I want to thank you. As you know, the Passover Seder has three parts. The first one tells of the past, of the Exodus and past redemption. The second one is today, us gathering and sharing food, which is the one most challenged. But the third one, that is very medieval in its nature, comes out of the tremendous suffering and angst, and it's about the future. It's about the fact that there is something that we're moving towards. No matter how tough the situation is today, the Seder ends with L'Shana Ba Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem, and the message of hope. So, you know, and while none of us wants to be going through this, I think that for me at least, the message of Passover is the one that helps and encourages that we can make it out and we can come out stronger and we can continue building relationships with each other and supporting each other. It's a time of uncertainty, but we will figure it out.
All right. Well, thanks you both so much. There's so many words of inspiration this morning. I know I feel a lot better about life than I did at 11 a.m. when we started this program. So good. I think you both are in the right professions. So thank you for joining us today on Dateline New Haven. Thanks very much to our guest, the Reverend Stephen Cousin of Bethel AME Church and Rabbi Michael Farman of Temple Emmanuel. I love talking to both of you, and it was just a real treat. I want to thank Harry Droz, the station manager, the miracle man behind the controls, who gets us on all the platforms in all places of the web universe. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night at WNHHFM, New Haven's home for community radio.